whole movement in comics as well. But yeah, so the one essay that Ivana talks about is one that I published in 2019. And it was about when my family got investigated by child services here in Vancouver. I live in a townhouse complex, and some people saw my kids, saw my kids playing outside and said, you know, these children are unsupervised, and put in a call to child services. And then it was, you know, a whole investigation. And it came out all right, spoiler alert, but it just made me realize, you know, how vulnerable we are, how vulnerable families are. And it happened to take place at the time, same time that in the U.S. they were separating families at the border. They were making, like, these camps for immigrants and separating children from parents. And so I was thinking about, you know, other families who are even much more vulnerable than my family. So it kind of starts out with the incident that happened to me, but I use it to discuss, you know, sort of how governments take a sort of carceral or punitive approach to child welfare. So that was an essay that was published on the NIB, and that one was nominated for an Eisner Award, which are the biggest awards in comics. So got a short story Eisner nomination, and that was really amazing, because also it made some of my friends kind of come out to me and say, like, you know, this happened to my family or that happened to my family. And I think that there's such an idea of shame, you know, as a parent to feel that you're being judged as a parent, and, you know, not just judged with somebody's looking at you wrong, but judged like your children could be taken away. And so I think that if that happens to you, there is, like, automatically this huge sense of shame. And that's why it can be so powerful to illustrate it and to discuss it publicly. And the response I got from that short essay was really incredible and really rewarding.
Yeah, and it's beautifully drawn, and it's a watercolor,
right.
Full color, really gentle drawings which contrast the situation that's really hard and heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know Miriam's family now. I can guarantee you those kids are happy and very creative. And if this can happen to Miriam, you know, it can happen to all of us, right?
Indeed. Yeah. I'm going to take a pause here so we can listen to a piece of music and come back and talk a little bit more with my guests, who are Ivana Filipovich and Miriam Libitsky, two female comics from the city. And I think we're going to come back and jump a little bit more into the ideas of, you know, how, as you were mentioning, Miriam, comics can really take us into these stories where like any good literature, right, where the personal becomes the universal.
Yes.
I guess, you know, with the question of how are we, the euphemistic we, how are you as comic writers and illustrators, you know, really able to bring voices that we haven't heard and that we don't often get to hear those kinds of stories through through literature or through comics. But I'll have you introduce the song that you brought, Ivana. I've never heard of this band, and so tell us what we're going to hear and what you like.
You gonna play the Wet Leg song?
I am. Yes.
Okay, great. Miriam, you're familiar with the band?
Yes.
Yeah. I find it interesting because when I first heard the song, I thought it was like two girls in a bedroom, like doing a song together. They're not actually girls, they're experienced musicians, but the song is so simple. And I think it also applies to university students, so it's a good combo.
Okay, great. Well, as I said, I've never heard them, so I'm excited to have a listen. Wet Leg with Chaise Lounge on Intravenous. Welcome back to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin, your host, and been talking with the cartoonists and graphic novel creators, book writers.
I think we do say creators, you know, if you're somebody who does both. But I embrace the term cartoonists also. I totally see myself in the tradition of cartooning.
Yeah.
Why not? It feels fun. cartooning.
Yeah,
you know, there's an element of fun to the sort of moniker. During the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, as in all art forms, women are at the back of the bus, if they even get on the bus, and how that is starting to shift.
Yes.
A little bit, a lot, step a marginal step. Amount. but that the last few years maybe have seen some unprecedented activity in terms of the recognition of female comics cartoonists and how that is potentially then changing the entire narrative of, you know, what's possible for not only women in the industry, but also the different voices and the different stories that we're allowed to hear through that storytelling.
There's definitely more attention. And I think last year, 2023, was a really significant year for female cartoonists in BC, especially because we got really celebrated. I don't think people are aware of the fact that we have some of the world's biggest awards here in BC. Miriam herself got an Inkpot in San Diego, which is an award that she shares with some really famous people.
Right. I think that the name Inkpot Award is not that much known outside the comics industry, but if you look on the Wikipedia entry for Inkpot Award and the names of people who have won over the decades, it's a huge, huge honor. Like it's kind of a career award for people who have really made changes, you know, who have changed the face of the comics industry or the, you know, comics derived industries. And in my case, they said it was about drawn essays, like kind of that putting that format. Like, I don't claim to be the first person to ever do a graphic essay, but I think that it was a recognition that you know, working in that genre has been influential.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, of course, the National Reading Program in Germany picked up her latest work, which is a collaborative work. Miriam, do you want to tell us a little bit about But I Live book?
Sure. So it's a project that is actually ongoing, and maybe I'll talk about how it's ongoing in a bit. But it's spearheaded by Charlotte Chalier, who is the head of the German and Slavic Studies Department at University of Victoria. And so she was... she is a German scholar and a Holocaust scholar, and so it was her discovering Art Spiegelman's Mouse and seeing that it was such a powerful way to teach a really difficult subject. Like, she saw that when she taught Mouse in her university courses, students were connecting with it just emotionally so much more and really understanding it. And so her idea was to pair Holocaust survivors who are still alive, which there are not many Holocaust survivors who are still alive, with graphic novelists to make these collaborative graphic novels about their experience. And so I was recruited to the project. She found me through Google, which is a story I always like to repeat because I think it's great that she Googled Jewish graphic novelist Vancouver. And I guess I'm known for tackling Jewish topics. And I came up and she contacted me for that. And I'm really grateful she did because it's been one of the most meaningful things that I've been involved with. So I was paired with a survivor who also lives here in the Vancouver area, David Schaefer, originally from Romania. And it was really rewarding because I think that more and more, I mean, people are discovering that comics are a really powerful tool for, like, memoir and nonfiction. Like, George Takei recently collaborated on a memoir about his time in a U.S. Japanese internment camp and such like that. But I think that the process can get very dry in a way that doesn't explore comics' full potential when you have, you know, A, the subject, B, then there's a writer, and then they pass that on to a cartoonist, and they're just, it's kind of an assembly line. And so the way that Charlotte had this vision for it was very much not that. So we worked with historians to get this really rigorously well-researched. I had a research assistant, which was amazing to work with, but it was really an organic process process between David and me. Like, I conducted the interviews with him. I would, you know, show him all my thumbnails, and then we would have phone conversations about what he thought and what he felt was accurate and not. And so it was a real creative process between the two of us, and I think it shows in the graphic novel. Like, it's really is a living thing, and not like a quote-unquote adaptation. And so there's three stories in the volume, But I Live. There's my story with David, and there's Gilad Seliktar, who worked with two brothers in the Netherlands, and Barbara Eileen, who worked with Emmy Arbel, a survivor of Ravensbrück. And it's we all took very different graphic approaches, but we were also kind of collaborating with each other. We were drawing this book during the lockdown, and so we had like Zoom meetings, you know, every few weeks where we would share our process with each other as well. So we actually influenced and collaborated with each other, which, you know, counterintuitively came out with our stories all looking very, very different, because we kind of saw, like, if you're going in that lane, I'm going to go in this lane. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of this book. It's it won a couple of prose awards for academic publishing and other Canadian literary awards. And then, as Ivana said, there's a reading program in Germany where they distribute, like, special copies of books that are just basically distributed through the whole country. And this book was chosen, the German edition of the book was chosen for that. So there's, you know, it's sold, like, tens of thousands of copies in Germany.
And it's sold in all the schools, from what I understand. Yeah.
Right. And so this project is continuing. Like, Dr. Chalier got a Shirk grant for it, and then with the success of this book, she was able to get another bigger Shirk grant. So it's expanding to more survivors of genocides and atrocities. So there is a team working on, like, Indian residential schools in Canada. So the historians are all Indigenous, the artists are all Indigenous, and the survivors obviously are Indigenous. And that's a whole cluster of this project happening, as well as Syrian survivors, Iraqi survivors, continuing to work with Holocaust survivors as well. So I'm involved in the second phase, and I'm working with a survivor in Toronto, and other... I'm forgetting some, but it's really expanded, and I think it's really a powerful project, because it kind of shows how it can be done. Like, taking these subjects that are so heavy, and also can be really exploitive when outsiders write about them, and doing this process that is rigorously researched, but also really gives, it empowers the survivors, because they're active collaborators with the artist. Like, they end up being a creator as well.
Yeah, and it was, I think I heard you say that it was really important for them to see drawings and to start thinking visually, and then more memories would come back.
Yes,
so
that was definitely
an important part of the process. Mm.
That was something that wasn't quite anticipated, but it definitely happened during the process, is that when I would submit my thumbnails to David, we would have conversations, and he would remember more things, and he would describe more things. And he already has a really incredible memory, he is a really great storyteller, so it was very easy to work with him. But through the process, yeah, he was having more memories, and he was also kind of getting emotional in ways that he said that, you know, he hadn't felt in a while, because, you know, these were his memories, so he remembered them happening to him. But when he sees the drawings and he sees that he was a small child, like, he sees these things happening to a small child, how I depict him in the drawings, like, it really was poignant for him. He's like, you know, I don't know how I survived that. Now, you know, seeing what a small kid I was when that was happening.
Yeah, these stories are definitely tough to read. And then we have another local creator, Emily Carrington, who also tackled a harrowing story. She was sexually abused as a child. So she created a graphic novel, and I think that was her first graphic novel, which is published by Drawn & Quarterly from Montreal. And it won the Land Prize, which is one of the highest awards people can receive in North America for graphic novels. That is a book that I recommend to everyone to read.
It's called Our Little Secret.
Our Little Secret.
And I think that book is super interesting because I think it does, you know, as you were saying, telling stories that haven't really been told before and haven't been told from that perspective. And I think that stories of childhood trauma have been told, but the way she goes into it is so deep, but also it kind of turns into a story of her seeking justice. So I feel like it isn't really a classic hero's journey in the way that we think of these kind of memoirs. Is like, you know, this terrible thing happened to me and then I prevailed and, you know, here's how I'm all good now. But it was when she came to terms with it and when she actually tried to seek justice, and that whole ordeal ends up being a big part of the book, which I think is very powerful and different.
Absolutely. And then let's mention Pia Guerra as well. She's a cartoonist and editorial cartoonist, which is slightly different. So these usually political cartoons or commentary that happen in just one panel. And she's been living in Vancouver for a while now with her partner in crime. Ian Butby, who I think they co-write some of their...
They write New Yorker cartoons together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Pia was listed last year for a Pulitzer Prize. The Pulitzer Cartooning Prize has expanded to be more inclusive of other visual expressions. And recently had a few females nominated and winning as well. And she was basically shortlisted last year. It just shows how important her work is. You don't get to be on the shortlist for Pulitzer for nothing. I encourage people to look up all of these authors and find them on social media or find the books anywhere where books are sold or in libraries. They're everywhere available to just read something different and very strong in terms of expression.
Yeah, maybe because I'll post the audio for this program up in our archive on our website and in the show description. If you can send me those authors' names, then I can list them and maybe even hot link them so that they can get directly to the page and find out about these,
for sure,
these books and read some of these fantastic books that you've brought to our attention and the authors that created them. I'm always surprised at how the hour just, you know, vaporizes even without a plan. And so we've got about 7 minutes left until we're interrupted by Democracy Now!, which is the program that comes up afterwards. But I want to make sure that, you know, I have everything that you want to talk about talked about, and make sure that people know where to also find your own work and how to find you on the big wide world web.
But I Live was published by University of Toronto Press, so it's available in bookstores. Like, it's you might have to special order it from your favorite local bookstore, but it's definitely available. And I have an earlier book published with Fantagraphics called Toward a Hot Jew, which is a collection of my graphic essays. That is out of print now, but I believe you can still get an ebook of that one.
Yeah, my collection of short comics, which was awarded last year, is available through Amazon. And as an author, I kind of had a struggle trying to publish short comics because the publishers would always reject it, saying, well, you know, short comics are not that popular, nobody's going to read that. And it kind of pushed me into self-publishing. And the best platform, apparently, for authors who are not that well known is Amazon. It's actually quite easy to set up and to publish through Amazon. So that's what I did. And then at some point I started kind of like giving the book to people. And one of the things I did is I sent it in for an awards competition. At that point I actually didn't even know that that was Canada's top comic art competition. It's the Doug Wright Awards, and they celebrate comics in a couple of categories. So I sent mine in as a self-published and won. And I remember voting. I was actually not in Canada when they had the ceremony live on YouTube, and I said to my husband, there is no way I'm going to win this, because all other people listed have had long careers and are quite famous, and it's just and then by, you know, some kind of like, I don't know, intervention, all of a sudden my name was on the screen and I was like, what?
So those awards are at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival.
That's right.
Which is maybe one of the biggest, well, not by size but by reputation, festivals for literary comics in Canada. And you're a special guest there this year, right?
I am. So we are preparing for various panels, for signings, and feels a bit surreal, I have to say. It was also surreal to me to hear that this award was the first award given by the Doug Wright Committee to a West Coast cartoonist. Yeah. I actually couldn't believe it, because I know the level of talent in this province, and that just didn't sit right with me, I have to say. Pun intended. It just seems that we are a bit overlooked. What's your impression, Miriam?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Toronto is obviously such a big center, and then Montreal has its own whole comics industry. And so, yeah, I think that Vancouver, Vancouver comics is a bit taken for granted. I think that we could definitely shine more on the national stage.
And we don't actually have a kind of like a decent-sized publishing house publishing comics in BC. As far as I'm aware, people usually gravitate to Seattle's Fantagraphics, which, of course, is a really great quality publisher. And then luckily we have Andy Brown, who is originally from Vancouver, so he always considers possibilities from Vancouver or BC as well. For Conundrum Press, that's the publishing house that he runs.
So there's hope for the for the West Coast and for the genre to grow, and for more women, more underrepresented voices to just be published and also recognized. So. I want to thank both of you for coming in today. It's been such an education for me, just in terms of the whole field of illustration and cartooning and graphic noveling. And I'm excited to read the books I was gifted and dig into these new stories. So, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for having us, Robin.
You've been listening to Intravenous here on CJSF, Campus Community Radio, and don't go anywhere, because Democracy Now! Is coming up in just not too short a time.
Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.